I'm Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are Paranormal Chicks.
Episode 395. Y'all, you know what we hadn't done in a hot minute? Patreoners! So, not only that, we just hadn't talked about Patreon in quite a few minutes. So, we're about to tell y'all some names of some people, starting with Bree V from California.
Ray L from Georgia.
Carla, question mark. We don't know where you live, so tell us.
And Tana O from Oregon.
So these awesome people are getting a letter with some stickers and all of that shipped to their house. That's why we needed to know where Carla lives. Not because we're stalkers. Well, Donna is. But because they're going to get that shit sent to their house. And they are getting an extra episode a week. And right now we're doing, well, actually, this only has one more episode and then we're going to change it up. But we're doing Worst of the Worst, where we did Worst Roommate Ever and we did
Worst Ex Ever.
Yep. And then we're doing Criminal State of Mind. That's where I'm literally taking the states in alphabetical order. I'm doing so good, y'all, with the states. I'm not, but I'm trying. But we are going in alphabetical order because I have a list. And I'm picking a crime from each state. And we just did Mississippi. So next is Missouri, probably.
Probably, yeah.
And then we'll look at my list before I get ready. And once a month, we go live on Facebook. And if you don't have Facebook, that's okay because it will still be available on Patreon the next day. We do Am I the Assholes? And then last but not least, Donna thrills us with a tale of a cryptid.
I don't know about thrill, but yeah. And really, I'm just talking about you. I don't thrill you with the cryptids.
Some of them are kind of cool.
But yeah, it's the ones that are the ones that don't have a whole lot of backstory and stuff. So I couldn't really focus on them for the main episode. But, you know, everyone needs to be represented.
And then sometimes we just throw in what we call an extra slice. If we just chit-chat about something a little too long in the episode, we just ask Caden to cut it and we throw it up on Patreon for everyone's, you know, listening pleasure. And if you're in the $10 a month and above, you get bloopers. And boy, do we fuck up.
Yes, we do.
So check out Patreon. Go to patreon.com/theapcpodcast and, you know, peruse, check out the different tiers and see what works for you.
But I will say that since we are coming up on the end of the worst, we would love to know what y'all want from Patreon. So if you've been thinking about joining Patreon, but you're like, the offering just isn't what I want, tell us what you want. Like, give us some ideas. We're open.
For sure.
And not just Carrie's legs.
I mean, how you think I got Colby? Okay, so I watched, and I think Donna finally finished it too, Monster Ed Gein.
I have not finished it.
Well, the last episode, no spoilers.
I've not heard.
In true Ryan Murphy fashion, was the most boring goddamn episode on the face of the fucking earth. why does he stretch? His shows are so good, but it is always 1 to 2 episodes too long. Everything.
Oh,
American
absolutely.
Horror Story. Like, literally everything. I'm like, it just went a little too long.
Well, and then he jumps a shark on him.
He does. Well, okay. Although, let me tell y'all one thing. I don't think this is a spoiler, but if you don't want to know this, fast forward. But, okay, in the show, you know how it seems like Ed Gein has a fiance? And he really didn't in real life.
Right, he didn't.
Like, she said...
She recounted.
Recanted, but yes. Yeah. Have a true crime podcast, they say.
The votes were recounted, but... Yeah.
I think what happened was she got so much, like, publicity that she was like, oh, fuck, and kind of was like, I really didn't. But in the show, this is where you need to skip. It really made it sound like they were, like, together. And then there was this one part when he's older and she came to see him. And I said, they did a really shitty job of making her look older. But then I saw a thing, and it was the beautiful mind of it. It was in his mind.
That's funny. Chris said, I wonder if she's really there, because I don't know what's true and what's false.
That's the thing about Ryan Murphy's stuff, is the whole time I kept going, is this part real or is this he just imagining this? Like, there was so much that even Colby was like, is this part real or is this a match? And I was like, I don't know. Because, like, there was a part where it kept flipping with his doctor's mouth and somebody else's mouth. I'm not going to tell you what it is. And I was like, I don't know, because it's flipping with his doctor's mouth. And then you do end up finding out later the truth behind that part. But, like, but that part, I was like, oh. But I literally out loud said, they didn't do a good job making her look old. And that's why. Because it's like Beautiful Mind. She didn't age.
It hasn't kept my attention, but I think it's because I thought it would be more truthful. And I guess I need to remember who's doing it, Ryan Murphy.
Right.
But it's kind of like, don't say the Ed Gein story.
Right. Man. Yeah, I can see that. It was really good. And I think that, what's his name?
Charlie Hunnam.
He did a great job.
He did, but I laughed because you can see his body and I'm like, I do not think Ed Gein,
you know,
had that body.
He lost like 30 pounds in like 3 weeks for that role. I'm like, first of all, asshole. 3 weeks. He lost 30 pounds in 3 weeks. What a dick. But also, he like really tried to lose weight for that. But
yeah, but I do not think Ed Gein
had
fucking chiseled chest and all the things. So it's like those parts, I'm like, mm-mm.
But it really did kind of paint Ed Gein in a light that wasn't him, but that guy did a phenomenal job. But just being the actor that he is, I did kind of get secondhand embarrassment for him a couple of times.
Oh, absolutely.
Just because I'm like, it's like when Evan Peters plays Dahmer, like, or any role that Evan Peters plays, like he is those roles, you know, like he just, you can see him.
Yeah.
But like this guy's not this.
Well, because Evan Peters has always played the weird kind of roles, and yes. Charlie Hunnam was,
and also very like fluid and like sexually and all that, and so like it's just not as, you know. But
he was Jax on Sons of Anarchy and stuff, like in a motorcycle gang.
He really did do a great job. I really did like it. They did take a lot of liberties with the story though, because I think it ultimately is good, air quotes around good, but like as fascinating as Ed Gein's story is, there's really not a lot to it. Like, there's not a lot of bulk to it. And so you kind of had to do what he did to make it into 17 episodes like Ryan Murphy likes to do.
Yeah, but, like, it could have just been a movie.
It literally could have been 5 episodes.
But you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. On those, it's like, it could just be a movie. Like, we know how it goes, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, the movie, it wouldn't... It would just be like, oh, nice.
Yeah.
And be done.
Yeah, I agree. Ah, we're like Siskel and Ebert over here.
Well, I'm about to say some more stuff. So you know how Tiffany and I, we do it's our second annual like horror movie marathon.
And we're watching Friday Night the 13th?
Yeah, we're watching that. We're switching it up.
Oh, it was bad?
It's so slow.
Oh.
Like we are in the third movie at the very end. And like, you know, Tiffany will finish a movie. Like, the only movie that we haven't finished, I think, we walked out of The Matrix, which, who knew it was going to be such a smash hit later? Like, every fucking guy's like, blue or red pill. Like, I don't fucking know what he even chose. We left. We were like, what the fuck is this? And I kid you not, there was a guy sitting by himself, and when me and Tiffany walked, like, we had our stuff, so, like, we weren't going to the bathroom. We were leaving. His face was like pure shock, disgrace, like what the fuck?
Yeah.
Not a thing. But anyway, but we cannot. It's so boring. And Halloween had stories with it and stuff, like a storyline. This, oh my gosh, Jason has no lines at all, but like the camp
people. What are y'all watching right now?
Jason, Friday the 13th.
What is that? What I guessed?
Yeah.
In my head, I thought I was guessing Freddy Krueger.
No, well, that's what we're going to move to.
Oh, okay. Okay, okay, okay.
And I'm like, you know what, though? Freddy, I feel like, was the only one in that genre, like the 80s horror, that really had lines. I was like, he was really an actor because he had to deliver those fucking lines. Mm-hmm. And he was witty. But am I kind of scared? Yes, because Freddy does terrify me still. Even though I'm like, hey, he's so silly. Oh, God.
Yeah, I gotta go to bed, terrifying, though. Yeah. But I think that it's going to, because it's so old, like, especially, like, the first one, you're going to be like, oh, okay. But that waterbed scene, because my parents had a waterbed, that waterbed scene got me.
Oh, my God. Yeah. did not like that. But not fans of the Jason thing. Like, it was really bad. Okay, but we did watch Night of the Reaper, and it's on Shudder, but I think I watched it on Prime, and I did the AMC Plus, like the free trial, you know, like you get 7 days. So
yeah,
we've been hamming it up on AMC Plus. But Night of the Reaper was so good. You thought it was going some way, and right when Chris, like, couldn't stand it any longer, he's like, because he'll just be like, oh, she's stupid, killer. Like, you know, he has no redemption, really, for all of these people. You know, he's just like, oh, she ran upstairs, killer. Like, she should know better. At that moment, it changed, and he was like, I was wrong. I was wrong. But we both thoroughly enjoyed that, so I think y'all would like that, too.
Donna, me, Chris, and Colby are meeting this weekend because we've got to get our outfits planned for this cruise because it is coming up in like 3 weeks. We've got some outfits to do because we've got three different party nights where we got themes.
Look, I'm just going to say it. Carrie and Chris are haters, okay? Because I had a good idea for me and Chris on one of them, and he was like, I don't get it. And I was like, well, whatever. And so I was like, I'm going to tell Carrie in the group. And she's going to be like, ha ha, that's great. And she was like, no, that's a stretch. Well, call me Stretch Armstrong because I thought it was great.
You do have a lot of really good ideas. And like, I think if it was in a smaller venue, like a Halloween party, like at a house, that would work. But because not everybody there is going to know y'all, they're not going to know. Tell them what your idea was.
Well, it's like a slumber party theme.
Mm-hmm.
And so for pajamas and stuff, we were just kind of talking and we were thinking about like making our own muumuus. And I was going to put the hat man as my boyfriend and Chris be the hat man, like look like the neighborhood watch, you know, because he's like the sleep paralysis demon.
Yeah. Okay. Except for Chris wouldn't be in pajamas, which I get. That's a sleep paralysis demon. But I said, Donna, we know you have a boyfriend. You don't have to wear it on your freaking nightgown.
Well, it's not even for that. Because then I was like, oh, he really is my boyfriend, though. But you know what I mean? Like,
They can't see your shoulders shrugging, but she's shrugging her shoulders. But I think that because, yeah, I think you need a smaller setting, not a fucking cruise ship.
Whatever. It was a good idea.
But one night is murder at the Met Gala. And I think we haven't decided. I think we may do Clue characters.
Yeah, that is exciting.
The problem is execution. Ideas there. Execution for some biggies.
If you saw us at one time that we did the Clue characters in high school.
It was not high school.
Oh, it wasn't high school. It was college.
I was living in Houston. It was the first Halloween back from Houston.
Oh, yeah.
RIP that cell phone I left on top of your car.
My dad went and got it.
That was before his stroke. That's how long ago that was.
Damn. Yeah, that was a poor execution because, like most things, wait till last minute. But unlike now, big girls didn't really have a whole lot to choose from in just like, oh, shit, let me go this weekend to get something. Like, it wasn't like that.
Right. So stay tuned to see what outfits we decide. All right. Well, before we get into Donna's story, we have to talk about BetterHelp because this episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. October is here, which means cozy blankets, scary movies, pumpkin, everything, and a few ghosts, emotional and otherwise.
Because let's be real, the ghosts that haunt us most aren't always the one in haunted houses. Sometimes it's stress, anxiety, old memories that won't stay buried, or that voice in your head saying, are you sure you're doing okay?
Exactly. And that's why we love that October 10th is World Mental Health Day. And this year, BetterHelp is celebrating the real heroes of healing, therapists.
Therapists are like the ghost hunters for your brain. They help you face the stuff that you've been avoiding and turning those hauntings into healing.
And BetterHelp has made it so easy to find one. You fill out a short questionnaire and they match you with a licensed therapist who fits your needs. And if it doesn't feel right, you can switch at any time. No spooky goodbyes necessary.
And no ghosting necessary either. BetterHelp has helped over 5 million people worldwide, They've got over 30,000 licensed therapists, and Sessions have a 4.9 out of 5 rating for more than 1.7 million reviews.
If you can get a 4.9 out of 5 from that many people, you're doing something right. And this month, BetterHelp is saying thank you to therapists everywhere, the ones who help us manage the monsters under our beds and the ones in our head.
Because if you've done any type of therapy, you know it's not just about fixing something that's broken. It's about learning to take care of yourself, even when life feels like a horror movie.
So this World Mental Health Day, if you've been thinking about starting therapy, let this be your sign. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/APC.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/APC. Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode and for helping us find the light when life gets a little spooky.
Ooh.
All right, picture it. Mariana, Florida, 1837.
I almost was like, Marianne and Wanda were the best of friends.
That's a good one. And even though it was way back in the day, it was still hot and humid as fuck. But more than that, this was the frontier Florida. You know, rough, untamed, lots of danger, lots of promise, though.
Kind of like your undercarriage.
I don't know what that laugh was. Which, when I hear frontier, it just reminds me of the gold rush stuff when I cover that. And it's, we all know the crime and the, like, everything that goes into it. So I feel like this was just setting everything up for Florida Man to be a reality. But this story centers around Elizabeth Jane Croom Bellamy. She was born into one of the most prominent families in the Florida Panhandle. She was born in North Carolina. And her father was Hardy Croom, who was very wealthy and had lots of plantations, was a politician, and was a general in one of the wars. You know, there's a lot of them. But they ended up moving to the Florida Panhandle, and they became one of the most prominent families there. Like, they owned lots of land in Leon and Jackson counties, if you know where that is. And Elizabeth was as refined, educated, and well-loved as they come. And in 1835, she married a young doctor named Samuel C. Bellamy, which is where Bellamy comes in at. And people said the two of them were inseparable. Like, they were instant soulmates. But that's where we stop on knowing exactly what happened, okay? Because there's a few different versions. One version I heard is that when they were married, tragedy struck. But then another version I heard that I'll go with is on their anniversary, tragedy struck. But what we know of Samuel and Elizabeth were that they were newlyweds, full of life. They were settling in. Because, you know, they were in high society. It was easy for them. He was a doctor. She was a daughter of a general, a politician. And so, like, for their wedding gift, you know, they were given a fucking plantation and shit. You know what I mean? So, like, even though it was rough and it was frontier Florida, they were on the cushy side of it.
Yeah.
Now, May of 1837, this is, again, the one that we're going with, is Elizabeth and Samuel were at their plantation and they wanted to mark their first anniversary. And it was one of those hot nights because even in May, it's freaking hot. And Elizabeth had worn a long white gown trimmed with ribbons and lace, which is also why some people say it was on their wedding day. Because it was her wedding dress. But again, I saw two different versions like all the time. Like one, I'd be like, okay, I'm going to go with this version. And then another one would be like, well, this is in, you know, this article. Let me go with this version. Either way, she was wearing a long white dress. So we know she's going to be a lady in white later on. But she wanted the ambiance. And even though it was hot and stuff, she wanted it outside. She wanted candles lit, the oil lamps on, to have that romantic atmosphere. Well, her dress with all the frilly frills that probably was gorgeous.
No.
Brushed too close.
No.
To that open flame. Now, I've heard within seconds the fabric caught fire. And witnesses said that she screamed and she like ran around trying to get it out and to smother the flames. And her new husband was trying to do the same. But by the time the fire was out, her injuries were too severe and she died a few days later. But then our friend and the daddy of podcasting himself, Brandon Schecksnyder on Southern Gothic, covered this, and he went with the wedding, not the anniversary one. And he said that something that makes it more like endearing and sad, that during her vows, she was like, you know, I will love you forever in this life and in the next, basically. And then later that night, she went up because she wasn't feeling well. And then there was a fire and she died.
So not she was caught on fire. There was a fire at the place.
Right. So who knows? Because this one acted like it had eyewitnesses. So that's why I went with that. But there is another version that she died in childbirth. That's why, again, I feel like it might have been the anniversary one. If they're having it here, like in childbirth and stuff, like they've been together. I feel like if it was on their wedding day, it would have just stayed on their wedding day in most of the things. Like,
yeah.
Maybe her dress catching fire would have changed where it was like, oh, she went too close to XYZ or
yeah.
Someone's cigar thing had lit it on fire. But anyway, in this version, it said that she and her baby both passed. And that, of course, after that detrimental loss, Samuel was never the same. That he ended up withdrawing from society and eventually took his life near the river that ran by their property. But how that made it seem is that it was right after, you know, and he just couldn't go on. He died 15 years later, but he did take his own life.
Hmm.
And then there's another version.
Good God!
You know how folklore is, but, and this is probably the most probable, but no less tragic. And I saw this on thefabledcollective.com, and it said that from the obituary and some of Samuel's letters, and I don't know if those were written to someone or kind of just like kept as a diary, but Elizabeth died from a fever and she was only 18 years old. Samuel buried her near the bridge that stands today, the Bellamy Bridge, but it wasn't there when she passed. But again, it was close to the river that they loved so much by their house. Then 1 week after her death, her young son was laid to rest beside her. What probably did happen is that she had like hay fever or something like that.
Hay fever?
Is that not what happened in...
That's like a cold.
Oh, I thought people... Yellow fever.
Hay fever is like a very common cold.
Red fever, purple fever, something. She had that kind of fever. He gave her fever. Okay.
Dad is like, and she died of allergies.
Which, sometimes I do be feeling that way, okay? But that Samuel did, like, miss her and, you know, of course, was like, in that grief, but he had a lot of financial troubles after that because she was the wealthy one, not him, even though he was a doctor and stuff. But it's like she's the one who had the money because her dad, who was a politician and all the things, he died and left her like all the land, all the stuff. So,
and doctoring was different back then.
Yeah. But no matter what story you believe, everyone agrees on one thing.
She did.
She did. They were in love, and it's very tragic. And it's tightly, you know, woven into the Bellamy name, which is where the haunting begins. Because after Elizabeth's death, Samuel had her buried near the river, and it was the Chipola River, not far from, again, where the bridge is now. The bridge itself wasn't built until 1914, which it is one of the oldest steel frame bridges that's in Florida that's still standing. Cue this song. I'm still standing. So in the late 1800s, hunters and travelers and even families who lived nearby started reporting seeing strange things along the river. Some said they saw a lady in white. Some said that she was glowing faintly and wandering the edge of the water. Others said that they saw blue flames dancing over the swamp at night, almost like the air was on fire. And they called them will-o'-the-wisp, like ghost lights. And other people said that if you looked closely at the woman in white, you could see her dress flicker with fire as she drifted through the fog, which is very timely because it has been foggy as fuck in the mornings going to work here. But she's longing for her husband, who she vowed, you know, like she would love forever and like never give up on this love. And like she was like, I might be dead, but I come find you.
I was just about to say that.
There are some newspaper accounts too that in the early 1900s, the Jackson County Floridian ran some pieces about people seeing the ghost of Elizabeth Bellamy. Even some park rangers have stories from some visitors who told them that they were walking to the trail of the Bellamy Bridge Heritage Site, and the park rangers will see them and they're like, wait, are you okay? Like, you look sick. You look like you've seen a ghost. And they're like, well, we did. Because they would hear crying, and when they went to check the crying, because these people, they don't know about all the things that could go wrong in the forest, they went to check it out, they saw a bright white figure across the river, and then she would just float away and vanish into nothingness.
You mean like a fart in the wind?
Exactly. Ugh, and by a swamp, you know, it was smelling like that. But the haunting really seems to peak around the day of her death, usually late May, or sometimes around Halloween, and probably more so not because she's like, oh, Halloween's my favorite holiday, which is ours, but, well, mine. Sorry, Carrie just looked at me. I know yours is Christmas, but I think it might just be more because more people are out there looking, and so maybe that's it.
Yeah.
Or people are lying. Who knows?
Probably.
But folks say that's when she's most restless and when the air near the bridge just has this stillness to it. And when it is, like, even the frogs stop croaking and it's like you kind of get that sense that something else is there. Someone else is there and not of this world. Now, people who visit do describe hearing a woman sobbing in the woods, like I've said, or catching the smell of smoke when there's no fire nearby. A few have claimed to see footprints near the river's edge, kind of like someone walking along it. And then sometimes they even said that, like, the footprints would kind of be swept away, like a long gown was behind it. So it was, like, faintly there. Now, the Bellamy family itself is really tied deeply to Florida's early history. Elizabeth's brother, Hardy Bryan Croom Jr., and much of her extended family died in a shipwreck in 1837, just months after her own death. And people of Florida say it's like tragedy followed the Crooms and the Bellamys wherever they went.
I was just about to say, sounds like they're cursed.
Right. And I mean, some people might think that it's because they were plantation owners and all the things. Like, you never know. But now the Bellamy Bridge has become a gathering place for ghost hunters and historians and, you know, people like us. When we do a local meetup, we would probably go there because, you know, I love a good bridge story.
You do.
And during October, especially near Halloween, The small dirt road that leads to the bridge is filled with flashlights, and there's just, you know, the Scooby-Doo gang trying to find this ghost out there. People come and bring her gifts like flowers, candles, and even wedding ribbons, which I don't know what those are, but cool. But they lay near the bridge in her memory. A few visitors say that when they have set their gift down, they feel like a sudden drop in temperature or a gust of wind against their cheek, kind of like her saying thank you, her acknowledging that she sees what they're doing. One person said that they heard a woman's voice whisper their name, not just something, you know, like where you don't know what they're saying, like they distinctly heard their name, but no one else was nearby. And then one couple said that they saw what looked to be a glowing figure walking the length of the bridge, only to fade into mist right before their eyes. Now, skeptics will say it's just swamp gas. And remember that alien was like, it's just swamp gas. Other people say, oh, it's glowing and stuff because it's headlights from cars. And there's like a road over there that you know, your eyes are playing tricks on you. But the locals say there is a different energy there and that they believe that the Chipola River has a way of keeping its secrets. And that was like one of their most beloved memories is being by that river. Now, in the 1970s, there was this local teenager who said that her and her friends were brave enough or
dumb.
They drove out to Bellamy Bridge late one night. They walked halfway across the bridge, laughing, daring each other to call out to the ghost. And then from down by the water, they heard a woman crying.
You mean down by the bay?
Mm-hmm. And it was faint, but also clear. You know, once they kind of tuned their ears at what's that noise, they heard the sobbing. So, of course, their laughter stopped. Everyone was kind of on edge, and they very shortly turned back, and when they looked behind them, they saw a figure standing there in white at the far end of the bridge, motionless, and when they ran toward it because they had to get through it to get to their car, it vanished.
Could you imagine seeing something that, like, literally is the scariest thing you've ever seen, but you have to run to it? What are you, a first responder?
I know. Be like, well, I'm just going to shit and pee here and come get me later.
Right.
If I survive, okay, bring me a hamburger, but
this is where I die.
Yep. And like I said, the park rangers, if you're there and you're like, hey, do you have any local stories? They're like, do I? And they'll tell you all of them. They say that a lot of people report lights moving through the trees when there's no flashlights or cars. And back in the day, there were no lanterns for miles. Some say that their cameras and their phones malfunction, batteries drain, which Carrie wouldn't know about that because she lives on the edge of her battery dying.
Donna, and I will have you know, I'm on 22%
right
now.
That is too, oh my God. No. Okay. Also, they have had the recorders pick up sounds like whispers when there's no one else speaking, or someone's clearly speaking like I am right now, and you hear a whisper through it, which is more creepy to me because it's like, wait, especially if, like, if Carrie did that to me, it would throw me off. Like, I would be talking and be like, wait, what? You know, like, I, in movies, when they're screaming at each other, I'm like, how do they keep up with what words they're supposed to be saying?
Yeah.
Because I can't. Like, I can be so mad, but if you're saying something with me, I'm like, wait, what was I saying? I don't even remember. But if you are like, I want to go, I live close to it, but I don't want anything spooky, it's not always spooky. Some visitors say that it seems peaceful to them, especially when it is that stillness and the frogs aren't croaking. And when you think about it, she's just looking for her husband, her long lost husband. But whether you believe in ghosts or not, Bellamy Bridge has earned its reputation as one of Florida's most haunted places. We know Elizabeth Bellamy lived, she died young, and she left behind a story that lives on, even though she doesn't.
Damn.
Too much? Too harsh?
Too much.
So, like I said, if you are local and you want to go down there and you're by yourself standing on the old bridge, just listen carefully because you might hear someone crying. Might be me. Maybe laughter. Also might be me. Or it could be swamp gas.
Also might be you.
Or it might really be Elizabeth Bellamy.
Did you say it's me belly?
Words. That's right. That said words. I couldn't even come. Yeah, facts. That is fantastic. Me belly.
Me belly me.
That actually does sound like something I would say, though.
Duh. That's why I said it.
Even though this isn't the kickoff to October, because
October. Shit. Happy Halloween.
But I was like, a bridge story, because you know I love them. But yeah, hopefully y'all enjoyed that too. And yeah, it's October. Spooky month.
Hmm.
And before you get into your story, there is there is a TikTok that I've got to post in the Facebook group because it's two people who won, like who placed, I guess I should say, at a like a scary evil laugh contest. And I was like, they don't hold a candle to Carrie doing that. I was going to say his fucking name. And y'all couldn't see me, but I fucking jumped. I jumped. Tiny came back.
Ask vengeance. And you shall receive.
I didn't ask. Look, I got chill bones. It's the high pitchness of it that just like curls my toes.
Well, since I almost quite literally scared the life out of Donna, we have to talk about Select Quote. Because y'all know, we love talking about scary stories and, well, scaring each other. But you know what's actually more terrifying? Finding out you've been paying too much for life insurance. Worse than that, you don't have enough coverage or any.
It's the kind of real-life horror movie no one wants to star in. Not to put anyone on edge, but if you get your life insurance through your company, what happens if they ghost you? What happens if they say RIP to your job? You don't have life insurance anymore. That's why you should go through Select Quote.
Poof, that coverage disappears faster than a ghost in daylight. But here's the good news. It's super simple to get right, thanks to Select Quote. They've been helping people for over 40 years, and more than 2 million Americans have used Select Quote to secure over $700 billion in coverage. That's a lot of peace of mind and money.
And what makes them amazing is that they're not trying to sell you a one-size-fits-all policy, because we know that never works. Select Quote's licensed agents will actually work for you. In just 15 minutes, they compare rates from top-rated carriers to find the best policy for your health and your budget.
And they do it all for free. I mean, who doesn't love a good deal, especially one that protects your family? Plus, if you're healthy, you could qualify for same-day coverage for up to $2 million without a medical exam.
And if you're like us, maybe a little sickly, maybe your immune system's seen better days, they've got policies for people with pre-existing conditions like high blood pressure, diabetes, or heart issues.
Look, life insurance is never going to be cheaper than it is today. And with everything that's going on, AI, the economy, doing somersaults, it just makes sense to protect what matters most. So go to selectquote.com/creep to get the right life insurance for you for less and save more than 50%.
That's selectquote.com/creep to save more than 50% on term life insurance today.
Select Quote. They shop, you save. And that's one less thing to be haunted by. Okay, so there were a lot of things, like a lot of references for this story, but I just want to shout out to four of them that were like the key ones, this one called Liberation Route Europe, theconversation.com, Washington and Lee University School of Law, and Harvard University Press. So this story was a request by Donna.
Oh, shit. I forgot already. I was like, ooh, England. Ooh, like, I don't know. Okay.
This is the story of Ilse Koch, which was pronounced 800 different ways on 800 different things. Some things called it Ilse, like Ilsa, tons of different things. Some people said Coke. Some people said Coach. Some people said, like, so I don't know if I'm saying it correctly, but I'm going to do the best I can because it's all German. So Ilse was born in Dresden, Germany in 1906. She grew up kind of a working class household. Her mom was housewife. Her dad was a laborer, which I feel like it's 1906. That was probably fairly common. By most accounts, there wasn't much to her childhood. Nothing that would like really stand out. But she left school at 15 and went to work full-time as a bookkeeper. Now, this was around the time that Germany was in just like a really big transition period because it's the end of the First World War. The economy is shit. Inflation's high. And this is when the Nazi Party began to really grow. They were, of course, like it was all about, you know, in a country that was dealing with the effects of the First World War. The Nazi Party was like all about strength and unity, and we are racially superior, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they appealed to this wanted sense of pride that people wanted to feel again for themselves and their country. And Ilse was no different. So in 1932, she joined the Nazi Party. And actually, she was a pretty early member, and especially an early female member.
It's so weird to think about that there were women
mm-hmm.
in the Nazi Party.
Right. Now, she was like deep in her beliefs of a true Aryan purity. And she's like, this is exactly who I am. But here's the thing. A lot of stuff was like, she's young, she's blonde, blah, blah, blah. But then other stuff would be like, she's young, she's redheaded. And I'm like, what?
Well, but maybe strawberry blonde.
No, like things would be like, she was a fiery redhead. And I'm like, so was she blonde or was she redhead? Literally, some things were like staunch, she was redheaded. And then other things were like, this is what made her so pure Aryan is because she was blonde. So I don't know, but the color of her hair doesn't matter. But it's one of those things that I felt like was always mentioned. And so it's interesting that it was always wrong, question mark, maybe. Through joining the Nazi Party, she met a man named Karl Koch, who she would eventually marry. He grew up similarly to her, not a lot of money, but was rising as an SS officer in the Nazi Party. And so as he kind of was gaining ranks, he was gaining like more importance. And then they themselves together kind of became like this power couple in the Nazi Party. So they got married in 1963. But this was interesting. She had to prove through documentation her Aryan ancestry.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
I mean, makes sense.
I mean, it does make sense. But like, I don't know. Like, how do you even do that? You know?
Right.
And I mean, what if you couldn't? I don't know. And what documentation in 1936 were you like, here's my family Bible with all the marriages? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So like I said, together, they were a bit of like a Nazi power couple. I mean, as shitty as that sounds, but they were. But part of that was that they were also going to be birthing kind of like this first generation of like, quote, pure children to the Nazi regime.
When you say it like that, it just kind of reminds me of The Handmaid's Tale.
Yes. And they did exactly what everybody wanted them to do. They had three kids, two daughters, and one son. Now, Karl's military career was doing really well. He was growing in ranks quickly. And by 1937, he was essentially like a commander of a new concentration camp near Weimar. Now, this area had a lot of beech trees. So because of the beech trees, he was like, why don't we name this Buchenwald? Because it literally means beech forest. But like B-E-E-C-H trees.
Like, it's just like, oh, let's name this awesome camp. It's a concentration camp.
Well, and let me tell you this too. Like, I was listening to this podcast called Talk Murder to Me. They did this story back in 2020. Actually, like October 13th, 2020. It's so weird it happened like almost like the exact day that we're going to put this out, but like 5 years ago. And they were just talking about how Weimar is like a city and it's still like a fully operational city. Like, while this concentration camp is happening, it's still this like fully operational city, and how like kind of saying like it's shitty how these people watched all this happen and did nothing. But then I'm like, but what would they do? Because if they tried to buck the system, if they tried to do anything, they would have just been killed. So what could they have done? I don't know. I mean, that's what's so scary, is it's like, what can you do?
Well, and also the propaganda that was being like shoved down people's throats. So they really thought, oh, well, you know, it's a bad time. So if they lost their job, it is because of XYZ.
Right.
And then, hey, they're not doing anything. They're just getting them out of our lives. Like, they're taking them on a train, going somewhere else. And
much like, honestly, like, we really try to not be political on this podcast, but really much like what's happening with undocumented immigrants in our country right now. Like, it's like they're being blamed for taking our jobs. They're being, you know, like the propaganda against them. And then also like, okay, well, let's just put them somewhere, you know.
Yeah.
Literally alligator, Alcatraz.
That's so true. I didn't even think about that parallel.
But what ends up happening is they have this like gorgeous, luxurious villa house built right beside the camp. And that's where they live.
The boy in the striped pajamas of it all.
Literally. That's exactly it. And so the people in this concentration camp are, from what I can understand, I think they're almost like servants in the house, but certainly, you know, you can see just beyond the fence of what's happening in the concentration camps.
Yeah, it's probably the most polished, quote unquote, of them could be their servants until they're malnourished and then a new crop comes in.
A lot of stuff talked about just like the opulence and like luxury of their villa, and then just the juxtaposition right next to, literally across the way, is just suffering beyond suffering. And the most like, it's disgusting.
Yeah. It's reminding me of shows I watch, but these are actual historical shows, but you know, like kings and queens and all of that would live these lifestyles and have these huge feasts and then feed their population moldy bread.
Yeah.
But like not throw them the old bread that they didn't eat from their thing. It's like, no, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they would just have like that's just so hard to think about, you working as a servant in this house that's like throwing these parties, throwing all of this, doing all of the things, and like wasting all the stuff you can't even have.
Yeah. They would have these like lavish parties. They had horses there that they rode. The kids are there. I mean, it's just it's like the house of somebody that's rich, except literally, you know, 100 yards away, you have people who are being beaten and starved to death and worked until they literally die.
And then if you can't kill them from exhaustion and everything else, you euthanize them.
Yeah.
God.
Also, that podcast I was telling you about, Talk Murder to Me, they go into a lot of detail about like who all was at this concentration camp, because it wasn't just people who were Jewish. It was like people who, like Jehovah's Witness, people with different disabilities, you know, just so many different populations of people and like the different indicators that they had to wear with like different like colors on their clothing and stuff to indicate like who they were, where they were from, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that was really cool. And they talked a lot about how people were treated. And one thing that they talked about, I really should save this for later, but while it's on my brain, because I didn't write it down, I want to talk about it, that later, as the war was ending and the people from the concentration camps were being saved, that they were so emaciated and so just starved that when they went to give them food, it literally killed them because their bodies couldn't take the food. And so then they would try to give them broth, and the broth was too much. It would literally kill them. So then they had to start with water with nutrients and then start there and then like progress them with food. And I think about like, I know this is like the dumbest, like y'all are going to be like, this literally pales in comparison. And I know that. But that's my point, is that this is the only thing that I can even remotely compare it to, and it's negligible. And it's like, you know, when you have a stomach virus and you want water so bad, but you know if you drink it, it's going to make you puke it. But it's like, it makes you so sick to drink it, but you're so thirsty and you just want to guzzle it, but you're just like, take the smallest sip because you don't. And it's like that level of like having to stop yourself so that you don't make yourself sick. Like that is like a literal fleck of sand on a beach compared to what they went through. And as hard as, like, I just, you know what I'm saying?
Well, and then if you think about in like some of your stories where they've been kept captive and stuff, when they have been found, like they have to do the same thing where they can't. And it's so weird. It's like, no, you want to give them warmth. You want to give them food.
Yeah.
Like you want to be like, you want Burger King? You want McDonald's?
But like, but you can't. Just that broth is too much. Like, yeah, it's just
that's
like
wild. Because you see, my brain went to Burger King, McDonald's, and like, well, you're
saying broth. I mean, I know that you can't do that, but like, just like that would be too much sustenance. Like, I don't know. Well, sustenance isn't the right word, but.
No, but you're right, because like, even with like weight loss surgery, you can do broth after they've cut half your stomach out.
Right.
And these people couldn't even do that. Oh, gosh. It's so sad. And it's like, was this real? Like, God, this was real.
Well, like, and who was it? Like, I think it was the president. I can't remember who it was. It was like, take pictures, because one day people are going to say this didn't happen.
Right.
And it's like, it fucking happened. And we're going to make sure that people remember this.
Yes.
So back to the whole point of this story. It's not just a history lesson on how terrible the Nazis were and how people suffered. But Ilse was a lot. So she was like super over the top. She was really into her role as the wife of this commander, for lack of a better word. And she was beautiful. She knew she was beautiful. She was very into herself. She would spend her time, you know, doing all the things, shopping, decorating, you know, what all the people do with money and they don't have anything that they have to do. They can shop, decorate, ride their horse, do all these wonderful things that must be nice. But as her husband got more power, that's where she started taking more of an interest in the concentration camp and the prisoners themselves. So she started actually attending roll calls at the concentration camp. And then she would make the prisoners be stripped naked. And she would just like really enjoy watching when they would get punished. And then she started getting really into prisoners that had tattoos. And she would like get them lined up just so she could examine their skin. And then the more like intricate their designs, the more she would be interested in them. And that's what led to what Ilse became the most known for. So she was called the Bitch of Buchenwald. What she would do is when she liked a, allegedly, this, to be fair, this isn't, we don't know this, but we know this, but we don't know it, but we know it. So when she saw a prisoner that had like beautiful tattoos, and I don't mean tattoos like their number, I mean like, you know, a full sleeve or whatever, like a picture tattoo. And then the more pornographic, the better. But she would either have them killed or like wait for them to be killed and then have their skin preserved. But I thought that she would take their skin off, but it's seems that she would have someone else preserve their skin, and they would like tan it and stuff. And then she would use their skin to make lampshades, book covers, gloves, knife sheaths, and then would even use like thumbs for light switches.
What?
And then the problem is that towards the end of the war and all, this became hard to prove, which is why I say, like, we know this, but we, like, don't know no to this. Because some of the stuff, of course, gets destroyed when it's like, so the Americans are coming, you know.
Yeah. Oh, shit, we can't. We have to diminish what we've done. So.
Exactly.
Hide your kids, have your wives. Like,
hide your knife sheaths. So some of it, I think, you know, it was destroyed. But then some of it she also gave is, like, the knife sheaths and stuff like that, she gave as gifts. But why this story is so big is because this is what Ed Gein became very focused on. So Ed Gein was obsessed with her, and you'll see this in the show a little bit. She's actually plays a pretty big part in the show, the monster show. So there were like a lot of things written about her. And so Ed Gein kind of honed in on this, and like, maybe this is why he made a lampshade, because he didn't even have power in his house. So, like, why you need a lamp, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, is it true, like, how on the show she, like, rode that fucking horse through the house and, like...
I never saw anything that specifically said that.
Yeah.
But hold that thought into maybe...
Okay.
All this about her making, like, home items from skin is really the basis for her legend. Now, like I said, though, that was never proven in court. So that's why I say, like, we know, but we don't know. And as the story spread, she kind of became this symbol of, like, sadistic evil. But she was known, like I said, as either the witch, the bitch, or the beast of Buchenwald. But okay, so this is the part I was going to tell you about, maybe. So she would intentionally dress sexy, provocatively, when she would ride her horse near where the prisoners were, or just even just like wear tight, you know, just try to be sexualized or barely wear any clothes at all. So that if a prisoner even just looked up, like, because let's be honest, the people in the concentration camps fucking knew better, that because they were fearing for their lives every second of every day. They did not give a fuck about her naked body.
Right.
Like, the last thing on their mind was having sex. They were worried about, like, do I have enough energy to even walk to a bed? Like, am I going to survive this day? They're not worried about, is their dick going to get hard? Like, they're not fucking worried about you.
Right.
But if somebody rides by naked on a horse, you're going to fucking look up. You know, like,
even just, like, on a horse, that's what officers would ride on and stuff, too.
Right.
So it's like, oh, fuck. Like, let me just see who it is.
So if they would, like, look up at her, or what she felt like was lingered too long, et cetera, she would have them beaten, sometimes to death. But she loved the attention and would do it intentionally. And I think y'all should go listen to that podcast. I don't want to tell y'all everything I heard, but on that Talk Murder to Me, they talked about how, as she was doing that, the guards would be more aggressive because they wanted to, like, show off to her. Mm-hmm. And so she would do it because she liked to see what they would do to the people in the concentration camps as well. So it's like, you know, the whole, like, riding around in the house on the horse and all that. Like, maybe. But the thing is, though, is that, you know, even the Grinch had a dog. Like, she had a zoo and had, like, all these different animals, and she was so caring to all of these animals, but were so shitty to all these humans, you know?
Because she thought they were less than animals.
Exactly.
Which is wild. Like, I don't understand how you could think that way and instill it in your kids. Mm-hmm. And living right beside that, knowing what goes on. And I mean, I know she probably got fucking turned on by it, but
absolutely.
But just being someone, like, I don't know, like, her first day there, Did she feel some type of way or did she never?
No, because I think that she had been in it long enough that she already felt that way, you know, and it was like exhilarating for her to see all of what she had worked for with her husband in the Nazi party come to fruition. So at one point, her husband ordered for this indoor riding area to be built for her. And this was kind of the demise of them. So in it, there were mirrors all around it so that she could just watch herself.
Wow.
As she rode.
Okay.
But when they were making this, or when they were building this, 30 prisoners died of exhaustion.
Holy shit.
Now, they weren't happy in their marriage. There was a lot of affairs. She was shitty. I mean, duh. She had affairs with other SS officers. And so, as we know, they would get valuables and stuff from the prisoners, right? Mm-hmm. But that shit belongs to the Nazis. But Carl would keep it for himself. But Ilse kind of had told people that that's what he was doing. And it got to people, and they found out that he had used money he wasn't supposed to use to build that indoor riding rink and was taking the valuables from the people at the concentration camp for himself. And so they were both arrested by the SS and charged with corruption, embezzlement, and fraud in 1943.
You know what? I love that she was part of their undoing. You know right. what I mean? Like,
well, hold on to that.
Oh, God.
So at first, she was like, she's the one that told on him. And then she later was like, well, actually, wrote a letter and was like, no, he didn't do it. Well, he also was accused of 3 unauthorized murders of prisoners. And I'm like, okay, what? Like, how? Because if they're prisoners and y'all are killing everybody. Like, I get it, but y'all are killing everybody. How?
I know. Well, if he did someone who was still standing upright and not struggling too much, it's like.
Now, I get it that there's rules, but the Nazis didn't have rules is my point. You know, like, I get it that there's rules to war and all of that, but I'm saying that the Nazis didn't have them. But apparently they did, and Carl didn't follow them. And so he was convicted and executed in 1945.
Shit.
But old girl, acquitted, lack of evidence.
What?
Yep. So she gets released, and she's trying to live her best life as the war is ending. You know, America is trying to figure out what the fuck is going on as they're, like, going to Bush involved. I suck at words, but they go there and they are like, holy fuck, because there are literal piles of bodies, like an actual warehouse of just human remains.
Oh my God.
And I mean, it's awful. And they do find, like, a lampshade and all of that, but then some stuff says that they found a lamp, like, ready to be made, but they didn't find the lampshade intact. So it's like, some stuff's kind of like, so did they find these things or no? But there is some pictures, so I don't know. But there's also witness testimony, and that was enough back then. So as they're getting more information from the survivors and they're finding out about Ilse, they're finding out, like, okay, wait, these are all the things that she did to y'all? Are you serious? Okay, hold on. We have to bring her back in. So, and when she's 39 years old, they bring her in.
Holy shit, she was so young.
Yep. So she is awaiting trial for war crimes. Well, in possibly a thing of manipulation, while she's awaiting trial, she gets pregnant.
Oh, God.
And she refuses to say who the father is. But a lot of people are like, she's hoping people are going to be lenient on her while she's on trial and is visibly pregnant. But on April 11th of 1947.
Your birthday.
Exactly 2 years after the liberation of the concentration camp, her trial began. 31 people were accused of war crimes at that concentration camp because it was like all the officers and stuff that were working there, yeah, along with Ilse, and she was the only woman. And this was kind of more of like a, I don't know what to say, famous quote, but like a quote of this American prosecutor that said that she was, quote, sexy looking, depraved woman who beat prisoners, reported them for beatings, and trafficked their human skin. And so they just like, she became like this overnight sensation because it just was like, are you, like, it was just, it blew up. So she, of course, used her defense of, I'm just a simple housewife. And she's like, I'm a housewife. I have three kids. This operation of this camp didn't concern me. My husband's work was his own. But prisoners testified and said how she would beat people for looking at her. She would choose victims based on their tattoos. And she found pleasure in people suffering. So on August 14th of 1947, she was sentenced to life in prison. At the time, she was 7 months pregnant. And she ended up having a baby boy. But,
oh, good.
Doesn't end there. So as the Cold War breaks out, shit starts changing. And for somehow, some reason, some way, her sentence gets commuted to 4 years.
What?
People are pissed. Like, everything is like, outrage swept across Europe and the United States. Like, everyone, survivors, people from the media, like, people are like, this is, like, absurd. Are you fucking serious right now? And so, it's like, how can she just fucking walk free? Like, this is absurd. So, in 1950, she just was let go. But.
Oh, my gosh.
There's more. So, it didn't take long. Later that year, the West German authorities. So it was like Germany, it seems like, don't quote me because I don't know shit about shit, but it seemed like Germany was trying to regroup and figure out like, this ain't who we are and we're going to start actually prosecuting some of these people. So they rearrested her and charged her with instigating the murder of at least 45 prisoners.
Fuck.
Complicity, I don't think I said that right, in more than 100 others and one attempted murder. So her trial began in 1951, and this time they said, no, ma'am. They sentenced her to life in prison, and this time it stuck. She really struggled with her time in prison, too. She became more reclusive, more paranoid, like, really started unraveling. Her kids didn't visit her anymore. I think that, you know, when she was out, she was actually still kind of involved in her kids' lives because they were grown at this point.
Oh, sorry, your kids don't want to be with a freaking, like, sadistic murderer.
Well, and you know, and I don't, this next part, I'm going to be honest, I saw this a couple of different ways, but I'm choosing that this is the story. It said that Uwe, I think is his name, the son that was born when she was in prison, he only met her once as an adult, and right after he met her, like, it was too much. And he died by suicide.
Holy shit.
It seemed like other stuff said he died by suicide, but it was like her meeting part is what the part that like changed. When Ilse was 60 years old in 1967, she herself died by suicide from hanging in her cell. And she remains one of the most infamous people of the Nazi era. But, you know, it's like, it's one of those things where it's kind of like the H.H. Holmes of it all, like how his story is a lot, but it has just grown exponentially. Like, I don't know, but that's such a shitty example because, you know, Nazis. So it's a shitty example, but I think people make her story more than it probably is with some of the like making of like the lampshades and stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you don't even have to add that to her story for her to be really shitty.
Right.
And for her to deserve to be in prison for the rest of her fucking life. Like, her story doesn't even need that to be fucking awful.
Yeah. I saw her on the monster thing and I was like, is she real? Is that a real person? Because again, what was real, what was not on the thing? And Carrie looked it up and I was like, oh, then I'm going to need you to do her then, because holy shit, I did not know anything about her. Well, also the fact that Ed Gein, who we know what he liked to do, really took interest in this woman. Like, why would he if she didn't want to do the same thing?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I just, like, great. You helped create a serial killer. Cool.
Also, if you want to listen to it, we covered Ed Gein on episode 61.
God, way back when.
Over 300 episodes ago.
Speaking of parallels, though, I feel like when you hear stories like this, you know there was concentration camps, there were, you know, all of that. But then you see how when people are, like, given a platform to be more hateful, they're going to take it if they have hate in their heart.
They will rise to the occasion, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and I always thought, like, growing up, learning about, like, you know, the concentration camps and stuff, I always was like, how did they build them so fast? Like, I never understood that, but they used a lot of things that already existed, like a lot of like warehouses and stuff that were already in construction and then just had to put up like fences and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, also though, when you're using free labor of people who are fearful of their fucking lives, then they're going to do things a little differently too.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, too, like, on The Boy with the Striped Pajamas.
Saddest movie on the actual planet.
And you see it coming, but it doesn't prepare you.
I think it's truly the saddest movie on the entire planet.
Yeah. But on that show, like, you can kind of see it's a flimsy, like, makeshift fence. Like, but they didn't have to do this huge, like, moat around these concentration camps because they would just kill anyone. And so after you see that, after you see the torture, not just killing, but the torture, they're like, I ain't touching that fucking fence.
Absolutely. I mean, it's operant conditioning, period. I mean, yeah.
Like, of course, there's some people who escaped and, like, did it. But, like, I feel like if they would have left the doors open, people would have been like, nah.
Well, I mean, we saw that with, I mean, we see that with literally almost every kidnapping case too. You keep someone in captivity long enough, you can allow them to go to school, to go to the store, to roam free in your house during the day, and they're not going to go anywhere because they're too scared. You have conditioned their brain to a point that they're not going to do it.
Well, when I said do this, I meant when you went first, okay? Because this is heavy.
It is heavy. I'm sorry. But ask and you shall receive. Well, let me tell you this that I think's funny. So after we watched...
Not funny.
It's not. After we finally finished the Ed Gein thing, Colby was so great. He cooked dinner and it was so nice. But I gagged twice because he fried deer meat and it was kind of gray brown, which it's supposed to be. But it looked too much like
oh God,
the stuff from the show. And I could not do it.
Yeah.
He was like, I'm never cooking for you again. I was like, I'm so sorry. I'm trying so hard. And it was so good, but it was, you know, because deer meat is new to me, period. Mm-hmm. Like just eating fried deer meat. And so that's new to me. So I have to be like, don't think about it. Don't think about it. Don't think about it. That just did not work that night.
Yeah.
I gagged.
Why do guys not think of that though? Because Chris, we were going to eat something like on the couch and he said we should open a restaurant called The Couch. Like we're going to go eat The Couch.
Yeah.
Because that he's like table or couch. I'm like couch. But he had turned that on and I was in the bathroom. And I could hear him. I was like, no, I can't eat with that on. That's going to be gross. Yeah.
And I'm normally not one like that kind of stuff bothers me. But I couldn't for some reason. This one just affected me. It just did. It just did. And the deer meat got me.
Ugh, that kind of stuff affects me all the time.
It doesn't normally affect me, but this time it did. Well, thank you all so much for joining and listening. And look, we talked about Patreon. We talk about all kinds of stuff, but we know that not everybody can support us on Patreon. And if you can't, that's okay. But there's other ways. You can like, subscribe, review, all the things. And remember,
creep it real
and don't get scared.